Hi, I'm Laura Boswell.
And I'm Peter Keegan, and we have the talented Mr. B on sound.
Welcome to our weekly episode of Ask an Artist, the podcast where we help you to make the leap and become a working artist. Every week we explore a different topic from the deeply practical to the enjoyably creative, with plenty of down-to-earth advice to put you on the road to making a living from your art.
Now it's that time again when we let you, that's right, you, take control of the podcast by challenging Laura and I with some of your artistic questions. Thank you so much to those of you that have been sending all your questions through social media and our website. And I know that we've got a couple of juicy ones today. So Laura, what is the first question that's come through?
Okay, so this is a question from Fran, and she says, I have a question about open submissions. I've just seen an open call for an exhibition and I'm considering applying, but what puts me off is that the work that I submit doesn't get returned. It says it's archived by the art centre housing it. Is this normal? I kind of get the feeling that I'd be putting a lot of effort in for free and possible exposure, but I don't know if I should be. I left art college about 9 years ago and have forgotten what's expected from these things. Thank you. Right, Peter, that sounds a little odd to me.
Yeah, it does to me too. I'm not quite sure. I mean, I suppose we have to sort of pick apart what the word archiving the work means, because I think that could be interpreted in two different ways. I mean, I think what Fran is sort of interpreting is that they're going to keep the artwork, and like you, that's not right. That's not, I mean, certainly that's, from my experience, not the norm of organisations sort of keeping that work. They might keep a digital copy of it for archival reasons as part of, you know, a legacy of something or a collection. But in regards to keeping the real thing, I mean, I don't think that is sort of considered normal. But that doesn't mean to say that in this circumstance, that is sort of the part of the experience. But it should clearly, of course, be written out in those terms and conditions, which tend to be pages long, but are very much well worth going through with a fine tooth comb to make sure you don't fall into a trap a little bit like this.
Yes, I think it is a little bit unusual. I mean, I take part in a Japanese print show every time it comes up, and that's just for a mini print, so it's a little A4 print, and they do offer the option for you to leave your print with them for their archive, but it's only an option and you can get it returned. I'd be a little wary of any open submission that actually said that they were going to take your artwork as part of the entry. Also, I would be really careful about checking terms and conditions about copyright as well, because you want to make sure that you're not signing away your copyright, and that kind of we're going to keep the artwork kind of raises a red flag for me. I would want to be very sure there wasn't a sneaky little clause in there saying, oh, and by the way, we're going to take your copyright as well.
Because it's different to point out, isn't it, the difference between, of course, if you submit a work for an open event, the event is able to utilize that image, the image of your work, to promote that event and to promote the exhibition.
Of course, yeah.
That is sort of, we're not talking about that. It's that them keeping the copyright ownership of that work that they can later profit from. And that's the kind of, that's the nail, isn't it? The profiting side of it. And of course, we talked a lot to Saug Scholl, our copyright expert, all about this in regards to how we utilise work and how we keep ourselves safe from those people trying to take copyright. I have to admit, in regards to the open exhibitions and events, which I've taken apart a lot this year, and I've got a few pieces in all over the UK, that I've never had this come up before. And I do read, it said, you know, it's an open call for an exhibition. And for most of these open exhibitions, the works are for sale, in which case, hopefully, Fran should be getting commission from that, and of course, the organisation. So if these paintings or works of art are not sold for this exhibition, they definitely shouldn't then keep them afterwards and pop them into archive, because, you know, that's valued stock that should be returned to Fran or find a way of selling it. So I would, you know, Fran, really look into those details of it. But if, you know, if it is leaning towards them keeping it and archiving it, really do consider if this is what you want to do, because, you know, the fact that you've been out of college for, you know, 9-10 years is irrelevant. They shouldn't be keeping your artwork. That artwork's yours. You need to own it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Peter. So I think that answers that one. And if we move to the next question, this is one I'm going to throw to you first, Peter, because you have children that are up and coming and still at school. And then I'm going to talk about my son, who is a proper grown up. So the question is from Anna. And she says, given the current situation in the arts, would you encourage your children to seek a future in the art world if that was their ambition? So you've got two, Peter, tell me.
I've got two budding little artists. I mean, mine are very, very young. They're sort of 6 and 9, so they're a little way off the the kind of the higher arts education side of things. I mean, I love this question. I get asked this question a lot. I get asked a lot when I, you know, occasionally work at schools. When I meet commissioners and painting children, they ask about this, or people visit me in at exhibitions and open studios. And when, quite often, when they bring their children, quite often there's a child that, you know, is clearly a bit keen and interested. And then the subject of, oh, did you go to art school, comes up inevitably. And then you can see they're sort of, you know, would you recommend it? And it is really, I really do kind of sit on the fence, because of course I had an interesting arts education. I loved it in some ways, I hated it in others, but I very much valued it, and it certainly did help kind of build me, if you like, to be a professional artist. But I know that there is such a tiny, slim percentage of those that did a sort of an art qualification, a degree, that go on to the big world and are no longer, you know, don't work in the arts in any capacity, because it is, as we know, very, very tough. It's an arduous, long journey. It really is a marathon, it's not a sprint. Would I consider encouraging a child of mine if they clearly had an interest? Of course I would. I would really want to fully support everything they wanted to do, whether it was to be an astronaut or a footballer or even to be an artist, because I think, if anything, what this podcast is about is to show people you can make a living out of it. It is a perfectly viable option to become an artist. Artists are living people. We're not dead historical figures from the past. We are living amongst you in the society that, you know, make a living, and in some cases, people making a very good living. So I would encourage it, but have that sense of reality that it's not easy. You're not going to be spoon-fed, that you have to be incredibly independent, and it is going to be a tremendous amount of hard work to become, in our case, you know, jobbing working artists. Now, you've got a son who's sort of gone through that, and he's an illustrator, is that right?
Well, no, he would describe himself now as an animator, because that's where the field he works in now. But yes, I can kind of see two sides of the coin, because when I wanted to be an artist, my father was absolutely dead set against it as being a complete waste of time, and I needed to get a proper job. And so he was very against me becoming an artist, and in fact, sort of blocked me going to art school and things like that. So I have that experience. And then I have my son, who from the time he could hold a pencil wanted to be an illustrator. So we have always supported Jim in his ambitions, because I remember what it was like being desperate to do something, feeling it was the one thing I was good at, the one thing I was at home with, and having it blocked and trivialised all the time. And that's really unpleasant. And I certainly didn't want to pass that on to my son. That said, Jim would be the first to say it wasn't a seamless, smooth transition from art school into paid employment in his desired art job. He did an awful lot of waiting in cafes and making cups of coffee and things like that, serving in shops to get there. And he has always been very realistic and stuck with it, but it, as you say, it is a long journey. In my case, I was very grateful in a way that I had the experience when I left art school of, and I should say that I went to art school in spite of my dad. I wangled my way in there. I did go into the photographic industry, and I'm a second career artist. So it took a long time for me to become an artist, but I did learn a lot en route. But yes, I've always supported Jim in wanting to be an artist.
There's also as well, I find that it is not necessarily the budding artist, the student, one has to encourage this. It is usually that barrier of parental concern, which is perfectly justifiable, and I completely get it. And I think that when parents meet working artists, suddenly that veil is slightly lifted and people are slightly reassured that that it is possible, that it is a viable thing. For those that have no experience of the art world whatsoever, which is from my background, I had no experience of professional art. My parents are no way connected to the art world whatsoever. So I was very much the black sheep of the family and the first one to dip my toe into this art world. Yet I still had a tremendous amount of support through that. That it is okay. It is encouraging that it is fine and it is viable. And also that just because one does an art degree or an illustration degree or something in the creative arts, that doesn't necessarily set your track that is what you are going to do professionally at the end of it. So, for example, I did a fine art degree with must be about 100 other people on my course at the same time. And I know many of them are not artists, but they're teachers, they're art teachers, they're art therapists. They work in the film and the television and the theatre world. And of course, they're utilising these artistic skills, but in the kind of the wider context of the arts and the art world. So you have to think of it as a broader kind of church in that respect, that it's not always about, you know, artists and crafts people and artists making things. It could be transferable skills that you could use for others as well. So it is wonderfully transferable, particularly in an industry that somebody feels very passionate about, you know, the creative arts. I know I was as a child, and sounds like Jim, that, you know, painting and drawing was a thing that I just clearly was destined to do. So, you know, Anna, don't be put off by the current situation of the art world, because, of course, the arts has been battered, let's be honest, by these last 12 months of COVID, but it is recovering, it is working. And I think we both know many artists, you know, jobbing artists, have actually done incredibly well, you know, with their business professionally these last, be the result of COVID. So not to be put off by that, because you can really make a good go of an artistic career. So now we've encouraged everybody to become artists, Laura, like us, I think now's a good time to pause and splash a bit of colour into the podcast. So Laura, you've set yourself the real challenge of trying to produce the colour for this week, because I think there's a little bit of uncertainty of how exactly we say it.
Oh, yes, I'm afraid there is. So I really love a good paint name, and there are some fantastic ones out there, but that's kind of provided I can pronounce it. And I've always had trouble with the cobalt yellow colour Aureolin. I think it's Aureolin. I did look it up and have a listen online before the recording, but now I'm here, I'm panicking, and I can't remember.
I think it sounds about right.
Well, I hope so. Doubtless the viewers will respond. But I want to talk about it in spite of the jeopardy, because it's a beautiful and really unusual yellow colour that I always keep in stock. And it was introduced in the 1850s as a replacement for gamboge. Now, gamboge is my favourite paint name, and I really love that name. But sadly, it's not a reliable colour. So Aureolin has replaced it. And Michael Harding's totally reliable Aureolin is a transparent goldish ochre. And it's got this slightly green feeling to it, but it's an interesting one, because it kind of, when you get it out of the tube, it looks pretty muted and a bit yellow ochre-ish. It's very unassuming. It doesn't look very exciting. But when you thin it down, then all is revealed, and it's absolutely beautiful. And it's a wonderful colour when you use it in a wash. So I often use it for a kick of bright colour in the landscape. And it's also great for mixing kind of offbeat, because it's got this greeny tone in it. It's great for mixing offbeat greens. So in oil painting, I know that it's sometimes used as a glaze, and I sometimes use it in a similar way when I'm printing. And I overprint the Michael Harding Aureolin, as it's densely pigmented and it works really well as a wash to bring the other colours to life. Fantastic colour. Really hard for me to pronounce, but I recommend you go out and get yourself some.
Try and buy it as opposed to asking for it over the counter. Well, if you'd like to find out more information about this beautiful paint, and of course all the other fabulous paints produced by Michael Harding, then simply go to the website at michaelharding.co.uk. And now we've had our colour fix, let's get back to some of your tricky questions. And our next one is from Terry. And this seems like a proper dilemma problem, which I think I can see you're delighted with this one. This is a proper agony aunt question. So I'm going to read it out and you can tell me what you think. So Terry says, I'm in a tricky situation with a dear friend and neighbour of mine. She's always liked my work and been very supportive. I'm a textile artist and I made several special pieces for her at mates rates with great pleasure. Now, she retired a few months ago and now she has time to make textile work herself and has done a course online. Unfortunately, she's making rather poor imitations of my work and intends to show them locally at far lower prices. She tells me that art markets are completely different as I'm a professional and don't show them at the venues that she has in mind. She says that since the works I made for her were personal commissions, she's fine to be using them as her inspiration and I should be proud. So I love her to bits, but this feels wrong and I'm not sure what to do. This is a proper interesting moral dilemma that brings up all sorts of different issues of, you know, copyright, but not quite, sort of dealing with friends and neighbours. Where on earth would you begin to navigate this one, Laura?
Right. Well, I think it does raise lots of questions, and we'll talk about copyright and stuff like that in a moment. I think the crux of the way this is written is this is a lady who's in sort of genuine dilemma because she likes her friend a lot and they've got a good friendship together. So the first thing I would say is tread carefully here, because if it was a stranger, you could lay down the law and sort it out. This one, I think, needs a little bit of tact and kindness to go with it. So it sounds like this lady is an admirer and has decided that this is something she wants to take on as well. And I think if I were Terry, what I'd be doing is I would be using that. So moving forward, what I might say to her friend is, well, it's fantastic that you're making stuff, but I think it would be far more interesting if we found out what your ideas are and things that you would like to explore. Because let's face it, I've done that technique or that image or whatever it is that she is copying badly. And let's find out what you can do. And maybe say, well, come around to my studio and we'll have a session and let's draft out some ideas where you can explore your own thinking on this. And as for technique, you know, that's, I wouldn't feel obliged to teach technique. I think that's for this lady to pay for and discover in a paid lesson. Mm. What I'd be trying to do would be finding a tactful way of saying, well, okay, we can't deal with the fact you've copied me so far, but going forward, that's not on. Mm. And I think this is a sort of, I would maybe take that tack, emphasising that really now she needs her own ideas, but you're willing to be a friend and help her develop those.
That's really interesting.
But there is all...
Really interesting. Sorry, that you kind of do it as... You've almost kind of collaborated them in a way to sort of clearly define the boundaries and also, right, you're going to go in one direction, that's fine, then I can look at a different direction. I suppose the problem is that if the friend doesn't wish to do that and wishes to kind of cling, because we know, you know, there are lots of artists and makers that have a signature approach and a signature style and method, which they're not looking to change. That is kind of their consistent output, which is perfectly normal and often seen, particularly in the craft and design and the maker world. And if the copier is clinging on to that and sort of not letting go, that is quite difficult. And then this sort of brings up this sort of moral dilemma, doesn't it, of the difference between copyright and then the difference to plagiarism. And these are two very kind of different points of view. Now, we know copyright is something if literally someone's stealing your work, so they're profiting and benefiting from the actual work that you have done, you have made and you created. And that's not this problem, is it? This is actually someone drawing inspiration, which is a sort of form of plagiarism. You're taking ideas, but that's what us artists do all the time, don't we? We're magpies. We draw inspiration from artists of the past and the present to sort of inform our own creative practice. And of course, we try and make them look different and individually our own identity, our own sort of output as an artist. If there's an art, if there's someone else that's really essentially copying you, they're sort of plagiarizing you to a point, but it's very difficult ground, isn't there, to sort of do anything about it, because legally there's not a lot one can do.
It is. I think what I would be doing is I'd be using this first approach to have that conversation about the fact that A, you have twigged what she's up to, and B, you are not proud that she is doing this, and that it's not acceptable. So you know, get her in and talk to her about her ideas. And if she persists in this, then I think you have to be a little bit firmer and say, look, we're good friends. You've always been really supportive of me. But what you're doing now is actually undermining me a little bit, because you are using my work to trigger your work in a direct way. And also you are selling at lower prices and copying what I do. And that's going to affect my market. And we've always been good friends. You've always been supportive. And you should be aware that this isn't actually going to do our friendship any favours. And it's certainly not going to do my business any favours. So I think if you start off with the generous, let's look at your ideas and maybe I can give you a few pointers to set you on your road, you at least have shown willing. And then you can go down the track of actually, now this has got to stop. It's not helping me.
You know, I think I know a few artists that have gone through this exact problem. And I found it quite refreshing that one of the responses, which was not one I was expecting, is that actually she was okay. And she was flattered. She was very, very flattered, actually. And actually, she felt it was doing her own work, actually making it, was elevating it and making it better. So she was finding out her work was essentially the style, the approach, the technique was being copied, but it wasn't as good as hers. So what happened is it made her work look even better because the imitations were just not quite up to scratch. And of course, her price, which was slightly higher, was justifiably right. So artists, you know, big customers could clearly see that, well, I could have this less good, cheaper version, or I could go for that kind of higher aspirational one. So it's like she had this awareness that the style, the technique was able to be imitated and was quite aware and prepared that that was going to happen. But she was okay with that. She kind of made peace with that because at the end of the day, they are not her. They will never be those pieces. Once you sign it as your name, as your artist, it is you. And no matter how many times it could get copied by other people, ultimately, it is not you as that artist, your name on it, that makes people want it because you produced it as that artist. So it's in, you could look at it in two ways.
I think you're right. I think you have to, as the artist, really think about what you're comfortable with. And if you're happy, as your example, with this situation, that's great. But if you're not, then I think you have to find a way of negotiating through where you can be okay about it. I mean, both of us share a lot of techniques and how to on social media. You know, we're not particularly secretive about what we do.
No, we teach a lot as well. We teach other people to work in our methods.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, you know, and I'm sure just like you, like me, you find that you get students at the class who want to do a copy of what you've done to see if they can do it too, things like that. And I never have a problem with that. And I think that's absolutely fine. But as I say, if that carries on and becomes a habitual copying of what you do, then I think you are within your rights to put your foot down and just say, right, this has to stop. It's not doing either of us any favours. So on a final note to this question, I think what you need to watch for is how far this goes. If it ever got to the point where a potential buyer was looking at the copied work and thinking that perhaps it was you on an off day, but was still buying it thinking it was your work, then things have gone way too far. And that is an absolute problem that has to be dealt with. So tread carefully, but I think you do need to lay down a few boundaries, even if you do it kindly. So I think that wraps up our Q&A episode. So Peter, what's our takeaway?
Well, as always, for an episode like this, we love to hear from you. So if you have an arty question that you'd like Laura and I to answer, then simply visit our website or social media pages where you can submit your question there. Go on, give us a really good challenge because we do love them.
So thank you, Peter. Some great questions there. And thank you to everyone for listening. And you can catch up with us at our website, askanartistpodcast.com, or on all the social medias. If you've enjoyed the show, please subscribe. And if you could possibly go that extra mile, maybe leave us a lovely 5-star review.